And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. And as mentioned last week, I can't tell you where I am this week because, well, I'm not there yet, obviously. I'm recording this in the past, and I don't want to do anything to jinx it. But I will be talking about where I am now on tomorrow night's edition of Off the Hook. And, of course, next week at this time, we'll be bringing you a special program from the mystery location where I find myself at the present moment. But for tonight, we have a special program for you. This actually is being recorded in my smart car as I'm driving around town. But the program is not about... How you doing? Everyone's smiling and waving. How you doing? Yeah, this car just brings out all the friendliness in people. It's amazing. This show, though, is not about the smart car. It just happens to have me in the smart car introducing the various bits of the program. Tonight, we're going to be paying tribute to our outgoing general manager, Norm Bruslin. Norm is someone who has been at the radio station since before the radio station even existed, technically. We were an AM station, and we became FM back in 1977. And it's really something how a general manager can set the tone for a radio station. We've had the same guy doing the same job and somehow keeping everything together for so many years. And of course, there's a bit of worry as to what that means now that we're going to have some kind of a change, something different. But at the same time, we're strong. We've become strong under Norm's leadership, and we hope that the future holds some positive developments as well. What we're going to be doing tonight is focusing on a couple of recent Norm tributes. We had a huge extravaganza concert at the Brookhaven National Labs on Eastern Long Island, and we also had a couple of other get-togethers in various places on Long Island. So I'm driving through the streets of Port Jefferson right now and getting all sorts of looks in this car. And I guess maybe this wasn't the car to drive if I wanted to be able to concentrate on what I was saying. But I'll chalk that up to a lesson learned. So what we're going to be doing is bringing you a couple of... thank you very much. we're going to be bringing you a couple of snippets from the activities of the past couple of weeks. That includes various people reminiscing about Norm. You'll hear from Norm himself. You'll hear a bunch of us walking around on the grounds of Brookhaven National Labs, and all sorts of other fun things like that. Speaking personally, when I first came to the radio station back in the late 70s, Norm was one of the first people that I met. In fact, he's one of the first people anyone would meet coming to the radio station. And I'd have to say the thing that he brought to the table more than anything was just a sense of stability, a sense of calm, a sense of we can pretty much accomplish anything we want to accomplish if we set our minds to it. And for me personally, that's been a tremendous inspiration. It got me involved in so many different aspects of the radio station. I was involved in the music department. I was involved as program director, involved to a degree in computer work and all sorts of other things. And over the years, I was able to create so many different kinds of radio programs as a result, because there was nobody over me telling me, don't do this, this is bad, this will never work. It was always, give this a try, see what happens, and learn in the process. And that's what I did, that's what a lot of people did. And not only in the radio station, but throughout life. Throughout life, we carry this on with us. And I think you'll hear from a number of people how the radio station inspired them in whatever it is they're doing today. And some people are still with the radio station, even after so many years, myself included. I've gone on to be involved in other radio stations as a result. I've gotten into all sorts of creative endeavors that I never would have even dreamed were possible without seeing how a group of diverse people can work together and create something really, truly amazing. So all of that, I think, is something that Norm is greatly responsible for. And I think WUSB has been extremely lucky over the years to have somebody like Norm at the forefront. Like I said, a general manager pretty much sets the tone for a radio station, especially a non-commercial radio station, especially one where nobody gets paid, unlike very many stations of today. And if you have somebody who gets it, who gets the whole concept of non-commercial radio, then you're in good shape. If you have somebody who doesn't, well, then I think you're in the shape that so many radio stations have found themselves in the past number of years, and it's a sad thing. So I certainly hope that the legacy is passed on. I certainly hope Norm stays involved in the radio station, and that we all are stronger and better, and that we have listeners who will stick with us as a result of what we've built over the years. So for the next hour or so, we're going to be giving you some snippets of what was going on over the past couple of weeks. You'll hear yours truly walking around the grounds of Brookhaven National Labs with Brother Bill and Brother Nick, along with Gary Pecorino. And, sorry, I just crossed over some train tracks and might have sounded a little bumpy. We're also going to hear my first impressions of Brookhaven National Labs as I'm driving there in the smart car. A little note here. I was using the condenser mic of the iRiver that I used to record sound when I first arrived at Brookhaven National Labs. Now, for some reason, that resulted in all sorts of vibrating noises. So for the next couple of minutes, my voice is going to sound rather bizarre and strange because I was driving in the smart car with a condenser mic instead of what I'm using right now, the handheld mic. So if you can make it through those 2 minutes, the rest ought to be smooth sailing. Okay, I'm on the grounds of the Brookhaven National Labs. This is actually the first time ever in my life I've been here. Well, it's not entirely true. I hacked into their computers once, but hopefully everyone's forgotten about that. But they have concerts here. It's an interesting place. I don't know quite how to describe it. Very kind of woodsy and a lot of trees and grass. It's a strange-looking structure. It's a big sign. Big LED sign when you come in saying how long it's been since the last injury. I'm not sure. Whoa! What in God's name is that? It's a wild turkey. What kind of place is this? There's another one over there. Is that a turkey or a pheasant? It's got that plumage, you know? Wow, this is a weird place. I mean, this is where scientists come to invent things that I don't know what they do with after they invent them. But apparently nature comes here as well and does its thing as well. So they had a big sign. It's another one of those things. Big, huge birds. I think they're pheasants. They must be pheasants. Very strange. They're as big as a dog. Maybe we'll go up to one of those later. Last thing I was expecting to find here. So they have a sign saying when the last... this is where I'm going. This is the building, Berkner Hall. This is where the sign, I'm all flustered here. The sign said that the last, people grinning at me, oh yeah, the smart car, right. The last injury, I don't know, hopefully we can figure out what that's all about and keep the sign from from changing today. So parking, that's the next challenge. This kind of reminds me of Stony Brook with parking lots and no spaces. Things like that. So let's see. Very nice and open, though. A lot of trees, a lot of fields, a lot of greenery, a lot of weird-looking birds. And I guess I'll just find a place to park and see what's up. Well, that guy took two spaces. Well, let's see. I'll take this one over here. That's one good thing about... Oh, wow, there's a whole herd of those birds. That's one thing... smart car is so good for is parking. You can park them anywhere. All right, so we're here. Let's turn the thing off. I had to get a special visitor pass to come into this place. Well, I'm here with Brother Bill. We're walking down the scenic pathway of Brookhaven National Labs. It's just about dusk, and looking for the crazy birds that are around here someplace. But while we look for them, you have any...
I see some bird over yonder.
Do you see birds?
See a bird over there on the corner waiting for a bus. No. No, I mean the birds that fly, not the you know, the British term for woman.
Oh, no. I meant there's an actual... Well, there's only one, though. It's not like a group or a gaggle or...
Well,
something.
These birds were in a pack, and they were kind of frightening.
Yeah, there's one bird standing over there.
I don't see it.
We'll see it now once we get past this tree.
Okay. See
over in that corner by the stop sign? There's a bird standing.
Oh, my God, you're right.
Yeah.
All right, we found...
A bird.
We found the bird. All right, we're going to approach the bird now and see what happens. I think it's a wild turkey, or maybe a pheasant, because they're sort of like doing the plumage thing. But as we walk towards this creature, any particular memories of Norm? We're celebrating his... Well, we're not celebrating his retirement so much. We're celebrating his...
Celebrating Norm.
We're celebrating Norm.
His whole thing. He's an incredible human being, especially for... For someone like me, where I was like, I have never been a student at Stony Brook, and it's because of a guy like Norm who allows somebody like a community volunteer to come in and do radio for 20-something years. It's pretty amazing. So I think he has a lot to do with that, because other college stations and other non-commercial stations really don't allow non-students on the air. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I thought that was... incredible of him, and the hands-off policy as far as you can, as long as you stay within the FCC rules and regulations, you can pretty much play whatever you want. It's just an amazing place.
And you've done some amazing shows over the years.
Thanks. Yeah, I try to keep it fresh and interesting, and always playing new things. You know, that's what USB was about 22 years ago when I joined. Everybody played new music back then. You know, there were less specialty shows and stuff like that. Yeah, that looks like a goose. Is that a geese or a goose?
I don't know. I think we're going to find out. Brother Nick, do you see the bird in the distance?
Yes, I do. I think that could be a Canadian geese.
I don't think that's a goose.
Not a goose?
I don't think so. Maybe that is, but not the ones I saw before. I think we should approach.
It could be
cautiously.
But, you know, this is the Brookhaven Lab, and there's a lot of DNA cross-linking. This could be a predatory.
That's what I was afraid of.
Man-eating.
Well, I also heard there's a polar bear somewhere in the grounds. And, yeah, it's just a rumor. So there's all kinds of weirdness going on in this particular area.
I got my face ripped off by a polar bear.
And that's the voice of Gary Pecorino, who... Gary, it's interesting. Do you remember that show we did many, many years ago? It was a Beatles special. I found it fairly recently, actually.
You did?
Scott Warmer found it, and he mailed it to me. Yes, I think from 1979 or something.
That's correct.
No, I can actually tell you when.
You can tell us when?
Because this was, I swear to God, this might have been early 1981, and I'm not kidding you.
Okay.
This was right in the wake of the John Lennon assassination.
I think this might have been before the John Lennon assassination.
Oh, the show was.
Well, it might have been
talking 81. He's talking 81 now.
Uh-huh. There were two?
We did one in 79.
79.
Did we do one in 82?
Yes.
Did we do a second? I think we did, Eric. Might have done a second show.
Hmm.
I was very entertained by it, and you were getting smart aleck phone callers saying, I think this is in bad taste, and within 6 months of John Lennon being assassinated. I mean, it wasn't like you were making jokes or anything. It was just like an homage to the Beatles and somebody, mm-hmm. But people get upset if you tell them that the sun is this big, bright... hot thing.
But can you not bring that up, please? That always bothers me, just thinking about that.
See? We caught one of them right here.
All right, you know what? That is a goose. That's a big goose up ahead.
Let's cook it.
Well, no, but now I feel like I'm crazy because I saw huge turkeys, too, wandering around, and they were all staring at me, and they look really ominous. And there's a whole bunch of... Look, he's sitting down.
So, Eric, tell me how Scott found the tape for you. How'd that happen?
I don't know how he had the tape.
How did he
or
have the tape?
He had a CD, actually, but I'm not sure how... People have all kinds of, amazing things that other people don't have.
He was a listener at that time?
And
he taped it as a listener?
He taped a lot of things. I know Scott used to call up all sorts of call-in programs, including shop-at-home programs.
Yes, this is true.
Have all sorts of little prank calls at their expense.
This is very true.
Yeah, okay, the goose is here, and the goose is... What does it mean when they wave their wings like that? He's hissing? Hang on, let's see if we can get the hissing on... Okay, I'm going to... Yeah. All right. Next sound you hear is going to be a goose hissing.
Anything happens...
All right.
Anything happens, I'll be running that way.
Can you hear that? The goose is hissing. Wow, that's... I don't think I've ever heard that noise so close before. Goose, no, come back. I just want to talk to you. Psst, come here. Well, those goose, they really do have teeth, don't they? Wow.
Again, the animal in the lab is, again, probably there's probably two-headed frogs around here.
Yeah. Gosh, I wish I could find those turkeys.
Yeah, where are the turkeys? Where are the turkeys?
You know they're watching us. They're around here someplace. So, Gary, do you have any Norm memories that you'd like to share?
Well, you know, it's kind of a general thing. Just, I was going to say this. I don't know if I'll say this when I'm on in a few minutes, but, you know, I just feel like Norm has been the creative force behind the station. What is it? Creative provocateur, I call him, because he made everything possible, basically. I mean, you think about all the things that have gone down in, since 69 at the station. None of that stuff would have happened if we had somebody else who was telling us, well, you know, you got to play this one, and then you got to follow it up with that one, and so on and so on. So I just feel like, you know, actually, it's weird, but I feel like it shaped my whole life, the station. I know that sounds kind of goofy.
Yes,
and
I agree.
I agree, too.
With that? Because everything I do is sort of like the same. I have the same attitude. It's like free form at the station. When I'm teaching, you know, it's kind of a free form type situation. I let things happen. And so I feel like it shaped my life. The band is improvisational that I play, and, you know, all these things, they're all connected. It's a big conspiracy, basically, is how I feel.
Well, I mean, it's interesting how it takes somebody like Norm to sort of give us the free rein. You'd think that we would know enough ourselves to begin with that, yeah, we can do whatever we want, but sometimes it just takes somebody to say, you know what, it's okay, you can do this, and it'll work. And I worry about people who don't have Norms in their lives, how they're going to get inspired. They I think, are just going to fall into predictability.
That's probably true. I mean, and that's most of society. I mean, they don't have a person like Norm. I mean, how many times can you go to a job, I guess USB is kind of a job you don't get paid for, where you can do whatever you want? I mean, you have total creative freedom to do whatever you want.
And so I've had those jobs, but they only last about a week and a
right.
half.
Right. Because you realize they don't, there's a little bit of a dead end.
So what kinds of things have we done over the years? That
one of my personal favorites was something that you were at the forefront, the alternative presidential election.
I thought convention.
That was great. Convention. Yes.
That's right.
I mean, you had some very good, you know, ideas that people were saying, and of course you had the insanity contingent, which was made for better, you know, interesting. But that was a great thing, and I think Norm, one of the things that he also does the best is, being that SUNY is a New York State bureaucratic nightmare, you know, getting their hands on everything and mucking everything up and slowing the process down, you know, for any kind of progress, that we were allowed to get on the air, yourself, Lister, you know, some of the rabble-rousers, if you will, were able to, you know, express an alternative point of view, and not because of Norm's relationship with the university. They like him, they trust him, they took him on his word. If that was anybody else with some of the things politically that have been said on the air, that would have been, they would have pulled the plug on that on USB years ago. So Norm was a great buffer between the SUNY bureaucratic nightmare and us free-form programmers.
Yeah, I can't imagine how he did it. I don't think very many of us would have the patience to deal with hundreds of staff people of all different backgrounds and philosophies and things like that, and on top of that, the university bureaucracy. And just to throw it in, the FCC.
Absolutely.
We shouldn't forget the FCC.
No.
He's like...
Much as we'd like to.
So we're on to
don't worry, I'll edit that out.
Okay.
So what do you think the future holds for the station without Norm at the helm?
Turn that thing off. Well, I mean, who knows, man?
That would never have aired if Norm was at that.
Yeah, right.
Right away, it's beginning.
Well, I don't know. Maybe, you know, it's definitely Norm's leaving is going to bring up a lot of issues, to say the least. But I can't see how they're just going to bring in another general manager and we're still going to have this same freedom that we have now, you know. So I don't know. I don't know. That's very... Anyone else have a...
Well, I don't know either, but my... just through life experience, I don't have a good feeling. I've seen other, you know, entities that didn't even have Norm in the first place have the floor pulled down from underneath them, WPKN being one of them, when they were cut loose from the university many years ago. So,
but they still maintain their independent status.
But well, it's a good thing, too, because every university got taken over by the Moonies. And if that station had gotten taken over, too, they wouldn't be the same station as it is now. So it's a good thing that they broke away.
But think of, what was it, WCWP, which was CW Post, right? They used to be a regular student-run radio station, but now it's mostly NPR or something.
And the WPBX out in Southampton. Same exact thing happened to them.
I know, right. And it's just like, it's a reality. It happens. And I don't know, man. In this political atmosphere these days, you just wonder, like, you know, because it is such a place for free speech and people really do. There is no limit on what you can say on the air there. You know what I mean? In a sense, you know what I mean? Like, as far as opinions and viewpoints.
And in 2006, that's really not really a popular really way to go. You're just a liberal sushi-eating...
Right. If you have your own... If you're able to, like, use your own analytical skills and, you know, the mind that you've developed...
Forget it.
...by living through, you know... But that's what I just... You know, it's beyond... It's beyond the beyond.
You know, it goes beyond radio, though. I mean, we learned how to do radio, we learned how to be creative, but it also it affects you in the day-to-day life, like Gary was saying. Everything you do, you kind of think back to where you were able to be creative and where something actually worked, and it gives you confidence to do other things. And then you talk to other people, and maybe you inspire them as well. So it's incredible the effect one person can have.
That's true. I mean, Norm is kind of like, you know, he's kind of like a second father for a lot of us. You know, I mean, you know, it's just, he's there. He's kind of like a father figure. My theory is all change is bad. That's my theory right from the beginning. Okay.
Well, you've gotten conservative in your old age.
Flying in the face of reform.
And the deal is, you know, we're at the highest level we can get to right now. I mean, maybe not.
This is it?
I think we're pretty much, you know, I mean, well.
This is all we get?
This is all we get.
Oh, my God.
And it's only going to go down from here. I mean, you know, I don't mean to be pessimistic, but this is the reality.
No, he's right. He's right.
I mean, someone's going to come in and they're going to make changes. They may say, okay, you can keep the free format, but all of the graduates have to go. All the people who are not students, they have to go.
That might be, yeah.
Or they can say, yeah, everybody can stay, but, you know, here's the playlist. Something's going to change. Nobody comes in and leaves the status quo. Yeah. They bring their own people in. They do their own thing. It's going to change. The only place to go is down.
Yeah, and off the wall is going to be the first thing to go. Everybody agrees with that.
Probably so, yeah.
Yeah. Even I know that's, you know, that's going to be number one on the list. Wow. Okay, so we have some things to look forward to, it sounds like.
Yeah, sure.
Let's hope we're all
early
wrong.
Retirement, I mean, probably. Yeah.
Just the way, you know, you can't help but become pessimistic these days. And it's like, just to me, if it would be a miracle if everything worked out.
Yeah,
and we're still able to maintain our freedom and independence and, you know, get some new equipment, of course, and, you know, just to continuously improve the sound and the technical stuff. And, you know, I mean, that to me, it's like a dream. I don't know. I hope it, you know, I hope it comes true.
You've been listening to Grumpy Old Men on WUSB, a new segment that we'll be presenting every week this time.
I'm all for change, just not in my own life.
That's right. That's personalize it and it's all right.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, shall we go back inside to the festivities? It's getting a little cold out here.
It is chilly.
And I think the turkeys have gone to sleep.
That
goose is still there, though.
That goose.
Yeah, he's pretty angry, too. I've had a swan hiss at me as well. Lots of animals have hissed at me over the years.
It's something you bring out in birds?
And cats and...
cats, too.
Some humans, even. But what are you going to do? Can't change who you are, you know?
Yeah, we can. But do we want it?
Mm.
Do we have to?
Why bother?
Yeah, right. Why bother?
Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. China set the night on fire. China set the night on fire.
Hi, this is Jim Morrison of The Doors, and you're listening to WUSB.
China set the night on fire.
Well, that was actually a real ID that the radio station has from the AM days, where Jim Morrison, I guess he came to campus and recorded that legal ID for the radio station. Incredible, huh? We've had some amazing people come to Stony Brook over the years. And we recorded an awful lot of them and have them in our archives here at the radio station. Okay, that was a short piece from the Brookhaven National Labs. Myself, Brother Bill, Brother Nick, and Gary Pecorino walking around, brooding about the future, I guess. And later on, we got to see a good number of artists and musicians performing as part of a tribute to Norm that lasted, the better part of 8 hours, I think. It was truly an incredible evening. So many talented people showed up. We had rock and roll, we had bluegrass, we had blues, we had all sorts of a cappella singing and just spoken word performances of various sorts. It was truly amazing and just a testament to how much people care about Norm and what a tremendous influence he has had on not only the radio station but the surrounding community, and I think even beyond that, because now the radio station gets to the entire world. So as I continue driving around in the smart car, let me introduce the next piece, which is basically from a more intimate gathering of, I guess just about 100 of Norm's closest friends, where we basically shared stories and reminisced, hung out, had a whole lot of fun. This is the voice of Jim Weiner, who people who listen to the radio station have heard many, many times. Jim was also one of the founding people involved in the early days of the radio station. And we'll also hear from Rich Koch and Frank Burgert, who were around in the early days, in addition to some memories from Norm himself.
A number of you probably know that I've known Norm for quite some time, from the time that he and I were students at Stony Brook and both became interested in working at WUSB when it was a station that was only broadcast on campus. And as time went on for a few years there, we followed slightly different directions. I got involved in the news department, and Norm got involved in the music department. And then when there was a lot of serious talk about having the station become an FM station with a regular FCC license and broadcast way beyond the campus, although we had interacted somewhat during the prior time, we then began interacting a lot more as we started working on this project. And it really is extraordinary to me to think that Norm is now retiring from a lot of his duties at the radio station, not just in the sense that time flies, because actually, I mean, fortunately, he's able to retire at the age he is, instead of, let's say, some people, let's say, go for another 10 years or so and then they retire. And it's great that he worked very hard to get to a position where he can now do things that he can try out that someone might not be able to do for another 10 years. But so, yeah, time does fly, but fortunately, I do every now and then, I check myself and say, okay, but it didn't fly that fast, because it's not that far down the road. Be that as it may, it is a long time. And it's something that really strikes me when I look back. In retrospect, I think back to around 1970, 72, those early years in the 70s, and thinking about all of the discussions that were going on and all of the work that was going on to get to a point where we could even apply to the FCC, let alone wait for the application to be approved. And I think back to all of the efforts that Norm made, not only through these years, but even at that time. And he was the, I mean, there were many people that contributed to what happened, excuse me, along the way, but he was the motive force as far as getting to a point, even where we could just apply, get approval to apply. He was it, and I have no doubt in my mind there wouldn't be the station that we are today, not only from the standpoint of Norm's efforts over all the years, which are very laudable, but going way back then. I mean, that was really something where you needed a lot of tenacity and a lot of know-how, and that's what Norm had, and a lot of ability, which he has shown all through these years, to work with many different kinds of people who have many different kinds of interests, not only, although this is important, not only from the standpoint of good social skills so that people can work well together, but the talent that he has for encouraging and bringing people into an organization where so many different interests can end up merging and then emanating out to a large group of listeners who also have divergent interests, and to be able to maintain that is something in and of itself. But in particular, when you think about now, you know, getting older and someone retiring, and you know, I'm thinking about me getting older. I mean, I'm in my early 20s back then. Now I'm in my mid 50s, and I think about the fact that people start out in life very often with certain ideals. And this is not to say that there's something wrong when people have to change some of their ideals or ideas, or even if they have to compromise. Sometimes it just has to be done. But what really amazes me is to think about what this station was supposed to stand for, and the fact that all these years later, specifically under Norm's leadership, in particular because of Norm's leadership, the station is still able to stand for what it was standing for back then, without really having to compromise the whole thrust of what the radio station does. And at the same time, as a testament to Norm's ability as an administrator, that he was able to do all this while still paying attention to all of the practical details that involved. And it's not, certainly not an easy thing to do. If more compromises had to be made along the way to balance the pragmatics and the idealism, I mean, certainly nobody would find fault with that. But the extent to which he has been able to maintain both on such an even keel, maintaining those original ideals and at the same time addressing the very real issues that if they're not addressed can get a station shut down. The fact that he's been able to do that, I think, is absolutely spectacular. And one final thing, it's really gratifying to see somebody who wants to do something with their life, who not only because of just circumstances, but because of their very hard work and dedication, is able to do that and bring it to fruition, which Norm has done, and at the same time, not only fulfilling a lot of what he wanted to fulfill in his own life, has allowed so many people, not only, of course, listeners to enjoy the station, but so many of us who work at the radio station to be able to fulfill our creative interests and other interests for our own satisfaction. So I just think it's just marvelous.
Jim, 37 years, which is a long time. And we were just chatting before, and I was telling Beverly, you know, that sometimes I feel I still don't let him know how much I care about him.
Does everyone know Rich Koch?
Where's over here. In case you
have yet to meet Rich, I love Rich. Rich was our first FM program director. He joined me for the first minutes of WSB on the air. I think I said the first words, and then you said the second words. And right from the get-go, we were not on the air more than 5 minutes. When someone on the air starts talking about how the university put a student in jail, and he's listening to this in his jail cell.
Wow.
The president, John Toll, was sitting right there. We were not on the air 5 minutes. Myself then, almost 29 years ago, I don't know how I'm going to be able to do this for another period of time.
And you have to all know that I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for this man. Because I'd been at the university for about 4 months and had decided that Stony Brook was the single most unfriendly place on the planet. And then I saw this ad in Statesman saying, end of semester meeting for a radio station. And I was already working for another radio station part-time as a volunteer. And I said, I didn't even know the campus had a radio station because I was a commuter, so who the hell knew that 8:20 a.m. was on campus? And I walked in figuring I'd get the same bums rush I'd gotten from every other place I tried to volunteer for the last 3 months. And sat in the back of the room, and within 20 minutes got just enveloped with this group of people who all had this incredible vision, first of all, that they were going to put the station on FM. Which I learned quickly was the laughing stock of the rest of the universe.
It was. Right. There's a cartoonist. His name is John Reiner, and he is now actually the person who draws
The Lockhorns.
The Lockhorns. So if you see the Lockhorns, the person who actually draws it is this guy, John Reiner. And he was a student at that time. He's obviously a terrific cartoonist. And he gave us hell. Because he was an editorial cartoonist. And what he did all those years, when we kept saying, oh, we're going to go FM, hang in there, he would make he would tell these little stories in the cartoon, and the end line, the punchline would always be, 99 years or when WSB goes on the air, whichever one comes first. So those years, Rich, Jim, Frank, I certainly, they need to share, certainly as much credit as I do for really being partners in crime, I guess you can say. It's really hard.
Sometimes literally, but we're not.
Sometimes literally. I know I don't want to take a lot of time, but I occasionally tell these stories, and Jim will appreciate this. I told this the other day that there's a photo of me, and I'll admit it. There's a photo there from 1970 to 71, and I'm the guy in the right-hand corner. The name is Nicholas Johnson that's written there. Who knows who Nicholas Johnson was or is? Nicholas Johnson was a renegade FCC commissioner. Right. Somehow, Lyndon Johnson appointed him to the FCC, and he became this renegade commissioner. So people take on other names occasionally, right? I said that whenever I needed, I guess it was a moment in time, that whenever I needed to have my name in print, and I think there's some yearbooks that I'm in the picture and it says Nicholas Johnson. But anyway, there's a picture of it. But so I took a look at that picture of Nicholas. Yes, I hadn't seen it in a while. I don't know how many years. And in that picture, I'm 20 years old. I'm a 20-year-old kid in that picture, and I'm saying to myself, so somehow all these adults listened to this maniac kid who thought he knew what he was talking about, and because I think about myself now listening to a 20-year-old person. My older kid's 22, so I kind of know what it is. The students in the classes, but I'm certainly as appreciative of the people who, I guess, understood back then what we were trying to do and were willing to come. And again, those were contentious times, to work with students that somehow they were convinced we're going to do something in everyone's best interest. Back then, I know I've lost a lot of hair, but back then I had very long hair. And all of us, with the exception of Jim and this guy Sam Greenberg, you know the cover of the first Band record? Yeah? It's like guys in like long coats and hair all over the place and beards. Well, that's what we looked like. And we would go into, and AC Electric is still on 347.
Still there.
Now this is 1970 Suffolk County.
Yeah.
You had these eight guys, it was all guys at the time. There were some women, but not a lot of them. There were eight guys, six of them, including myself, literally looked like we had just, literally walked off the photo shoot of the band's second record. And Jim and Sam, who looked like normal people. And the other thing is, because we had to buy things like lighting, and fixtures. And in 1970 Suffolk County, I guess when too many people walked into a place of business looking like we looked, we sat in the car and you and Sam
and if I look like a normal person, what I'm saying is, I'm not suggesting there's anything wrong with the other guys waiting in the car. I don't mean to say that. Think about it. Think about me being thought of as a normal person. It blows my mind. It blew my mind then.
I've known Norm for 30 years. I started in 1976, and I think you and I started within a day of each other, and we both thought we had been here a long time.
A little before me,
and it's like, it's been a privilege all those 30 years. I mean, I don't know if the FM station would have happened without Norm. I mean, we'd be probably on the PA speaker in the cafeteria. hundreds of memories. I just want to mention two of them that are fairly short. I'm not going to go on a long time, but I'm not sure it was 76 or early 77, but when I came on, the FM station was not there yet, but it was an imminent thing. It was going to happen at that point. It wasn't an unknown, will the station go FM, when I came on board. I remember being in the control room two, the production studio, which was the on-air studio for the AM station, which was like on the air, maybe in a building. Nobody was maintaining the transmitters. Like, oh, we're going FM. We don't have to take care of that AM stuff anymore. And I got a phone call. It was somebody at the Health Sciences Center. There was no such thing as faxes or email. And he said, we have this telex for you. It's from the FCC. What does it say? It says it's an STA. Well, I knew at that time, I just got involved in the FCC lingo, Station Temporary Authority. You know what that meant? That means you can go on the air. You don't have the license yet, but you're going to get it, and you can go on the air. And it's like, yes, we want it. So I don't remember who actually went over.
You're leaving something out here.
Yeah, there's more details.
This was the Friday before. Because you had to coordinate the president of the university and Norm and everybody else that was going to have to be there for political or other reasons,
right.
We had already scheduled our on-the-air date to be June 27th.
Yeah.
So this is Friday afternoon before June 27th. This was like the last day that we could actually get the authorization and still actually go on the air. So we were getting ready to fake it. And to lie to President Toll and to everybody else who was involved in the whole thing, and we're on the air, and just hope that they wouldn't notice that they couldn't actually hear us anywhere outside of the studios. We're all sitting there sweating this out because this paper should have shown up weeks ago.
Yeah. I remember running down the hall, off the hallway.
So Frank called.
Like squeaky voice. I got this call.
And the other part of it is you have to remember things haven't really changed all that much. The Health Sciences Library, which had the only telex on campus, closed at 4:30.
Right.
The concept that they would stay an extra 5 minutes so that we could get
run over there, right? Yeah.
So that we could do all the other paperwork, so we could go on the air, was completely foreign to them.
They were like, "Is this important?"
Yes. So Frank not only got the phone call, but Frank had to then run to the Health Sciences Center. And if I recall correctly, you couldn't get to the Health Sciences Center. There was no tunnel under Nichols Road at that time.
You had to cross the road.
Take this paper. We're closing.
We made it. Now, June 28th, 1977. We were still building the station up to the day that we.
After.
I mean, after. Yeah. And the transmitter had not even totally been completed, and we were working into the night. And I slept up in the transmitter room that night. And we signed off at midnight. So I ended up doing some transmitter work after midnight, doing some final things. And I don't know if you know what a noise check is, but I was testing the noise of the transmitter and everything while it was not on air. And I had turned up the amplifier to hear if there was any hum or any weird noises, and there wasn't. So I went to sleep. I left the amplifier fully blast on a 15-inch subwoofer in the transmitter room. Norm was signing on the next morning. I was sleeping near that speaker, and I heard, "The sun is coming up!" What? 6 in the morning! And then Norm's voice comes on, it's like, "Yeah, we're on the air."
So, you haven't gotten that ringing out of your ear.
But yeah, in the early days, we signed off at midnight and went on at 6 or 7 a.m. And Norm was the first morning jock on USB.
He didn't have a hand in everything, but he allowed for that kind of freedom, which broke down any kind of barriers. I never felt like there was something that we couldn't do. There's always a could-do kind of attitude. Hey, this is what we're going to do. And he was never kind of critical and said, you know, here's why you shouldn't do that. Or he would say, well, if that's what you'd like to do, it sounds kind of interesting. And so all of a sudden you're getting some kind of positive feedback. And it's kind of unusual for a kid 20 years old, you know, that knowing that there aren't really any limitations. If you think of something, he wasn't concerned with how other people would react. And, you know, that's it's a rare thing these days, and possibly becoming rarer. Someone that actually takes risks and fosters risk takers.
I actually met Norm when I was...
I'll be back in 1 second.
Freshman? No, before freshman. Summer orientation. They drag you around to all these different places on campus in this, amidst all these big piles of mud everywhere and broken up stuff, and you didn't know where you were going, and there was no map. And so they took you into this, what was the student union? And there was Norm handing out papers to get people to join the radio station. Yes, told you everything you had to do, and I didn't take any action on it for about a year and a half. But I remembered what he told me. You know, you get your license, you go to that place in New York City, Varick Street, 75 Varick. But there's no real good story attached with a funny punchline. I think he gave me my first job. I was paid $12 a week to sweep the station and empty the garbage and polish the glass. That actually kept me going as an undergraduate. But really, I can't think of any. There, of course, there have to be some, but I can't think of anything. It's really astonishing. I'm just blanked out by all this. Yeah. So I haven't got anything good to say. I really apologize. I should.
And any dirt or?
You mean? Let's see.
Well, Norm's over there. We can talk freely.
Yeah, I know you got that Michael Moore face on. Yeah, you just lulled him into that false sense of security. You know, we're in this together, guy. And then, oh, you didn't know this was the point, did you? No. Okay.
Driving around in my pickup truck, the only thing you can do is pick your nose and listen to WUSB in Stony Brook. That and go out with the boys and chase sheep on Friday night.
Got one! But he actually was in the men's room the same time as Paul McCartney.
Yes.
While Paul McCartney was in the Beatles.
While Paul McCartney was in the Beatles, about 64. To play a concert at Forest Hills.
Forest Hills, 64.
He used the bathroom that they sent Sir Paul to.
But the way Norm initially told it, he needed to use the latrine, kind of got discombobulated.
He was in a VIP. I believe the story is his parents had him in a VIP section on, like, the court, you know, at Forest Hill. So those were already good seats. And this has happened with me at the Garden. When you're on the floor seats, you're actually using backstage facilities. The bathrooms are just the bathroom that happens to be, might be a player's entrance bathroom or whatever. So he's in that bathroom. And I guess the Beatles' dressing room didn't have their own bathroom, because here comes Paul ready to play a concert. You know, you don't want to walk out there with a full tank. And, I mean, I'm embellishing it, but essentially Norm can do about 10 minutes on it.
Yeah, in the bathroom. They took a urination together. Can we edit that? I think we'll have to edit that. And, of course, I think Norm doesn't like this. I always say, did you shake his hand? You know, I don't think. But I thought that was great. It's like, and, of course, like you said, at the last waltz, all of that footage of the interview footage in that cottage.
Yeah.
Proslin is right there.
So yeah, Norm is down with rock and roll.
Well, this hour has certainly flown by, and I guess we could have gone on for 6 hours with all sorts of Norm stories and memories and things like that. We heard from Nick Capozzi, Ted Schreiber, Joe Evangelista, Brian Katz, in addition to Frank Burgard, Rich Koch, Jim Wiener, and Norm himself. I gotta tell you, it's been quite a ride, and I hope Norm is gonna go back on the air where we can hear his radio talents once more. I hope we get a new general manager half as good as the one we've had for the past 30 or so years. It's certainly going to be interesting ahead as we see what develops with the radio stations, we see what develops with non-commercial radio in general. I gotta say, Norm could have done many things with those years. I think he also could have been in charge of the United Nations, simply because of the number of times I've seen him involved in conflict resolution successfully. Not only with people on the radio station, but with the administration and the community and Federal Communications Commission, you name it. And so while Norm could have done just about anything with his skills, only a limited number of people could have possibly brought the radio station to where it is now. And Norm was certainly one of those people. Let's hope we find somebody remotely similar to him for the years ahead. Well, I'm going to be heading out of here. Like I said, I can't tell you where I am right now, but next week certainly we'll be able to reveal that bit of information. And if you tune into Off the Hook on WBAI tomorrow night, you'll hear me live from that secret location, which hopefully I actually made it to. We're going to close tonight with some words from Norm himself. Hundreds, thousands of people have been able to do things they normally would not have done because of the inspiration they got from the radio station. I thought it would be good to ask Norm what it was that inspired him. So let's close off this hour with those words from Norm. We'll see you next week. Good night.
I always loved radio when I was a kid. 8, 9, 10. I was a big baseball fanatic, and I was that stereotype of a kid taking a transistor radio, sticking it under my pillow, listening to the West Coast games, and it was, and in some ways, there's still nothing like a radio broadcast of a baseball game. I mean, it's really unlike anything else. So the medium of radio was just something that I really took an affinity to. And then again, given how my age and what was happening in pop culture at that time, when I turned 13, 14, I mean, the Beatles, top 40 music, those times where radio really was king, you know, and you would definitely tune in every night to hear, you know, the top 10 countdown, WABC, WINS, WMCA, and this was, you know, 63, 64, 65, and so, you know, the ability to you know, in a way, part of what was so wonderful about those stations, if like people like Bruce Marr or those people did it right, they were building communities of people. You would come to school the next day, you would say, hey, did you hear that? You know, so it was all very positive stuff. Then, as time went on, middle to late 60s, and FM started to make some inroads. I guess for me personally, clearly, you know, when stations like WOR-FM went on the end of 66, WNEW-FM in 67. So those, you know, original pioneering rock stations and, you know, hearing, you know, the music that I really enjoyed, you know, uninterrupted and full-length songs. So that was great. And I think it was probably right around 67, 68 when I first became aware of WBAI through one of my older cousins who was a big fan of BAI. And at the time, I was still in high school until 69, and there was a guy who was in my high school class who actually was involved with BAI as an engineer, as a volunteer engineer. This was when they were up in the church on 62nd Street on the east side somewhere. So I came down there a couple of times, and I would, you know, just hang out. They would have these Friday or Saturday night concerts, and he did some of the live engineering. And I thought that was very cool. And I got to see some of the people who I eventually started listening to, Bob Fass, Larry Josephson, Steve Post, those guys. And I was very impressed by them and the ability for them to paint pictures on the air and to say things that were on their mind. And then also concurrently, while in high school, my high school radio station, Brooklyn Tech, very fortunate that WNYE, which is an actual non-commercial station in New York, is housed at Brooklyn Tech High School. So in high school, I had the ability to actually, as part of an elective or whatever it was, to be involved kind of behind the scenes and do some, you know, engineering, playing with some tapes, but getting a sense of how a radio station actually operated because they had to run that station and the students had a chance to get involved. So I would say that from a radio perspective, clearly the experiences of the medium itself, certainly in individuals that you know, I found interesting to listen to. There were actually some commercial FM DJs. I remember this guy named Alex Bennett. That was a very interesting character. I think he was on the old WPLJ FM in its first incarnation. There was a guy named, I think, Howard Stein, and he was on Sunday nights on the old WABC FM, and he had an interesting talk show. So, yeah, I don't think it was any one particular person that really said, boy, you know, that's the model. It was just a whole range of people that clearly seem to be able to use the medium in a variety of different ways. And for me, I guess when I came to Stony Brook, all that together, besides just having a big interest in music and just knowing that music obviously being played on the radio, that whole connection, kind of put it all together. And and to this day, radio is king.